So good morning, John.
Hi, Jenna.
Lovely to see you today. Thank you so much for coming. And I know you've just literally jumped off a plane and come to our podcast this morning. So we're very grateful.
It's fine.
So, John, obviously, you are here today because we are recording our third podcast, which is our True Tales from Harrods. And this podcast is all about trying to get behind the leaders that run our department store that is Harrods.
Great.
But you have a very interesting job. Your job is, I suppose, what we would describe as behind the scenes. You're the person that gets our stock from one place to another, whether that be the shop floor or to customers' houses, whatever it may be. You're the man behind that, right?
Well, yeah, my team. Yes.
Your team, of course. So can you just tell us your job title and a little bit about, yeah, your job and what you do?
So my name is John Lacey. I'm the director of distribution. What I do is, as you say, we move product from our Thatcham distribution centre through to Knightsbridge Goods distribution, receive those products in via those processes. We warehouse and we dispatch also online orders to customers. We deliver furniture to customers. And we also then through to stock operations, put the stock into the stock rooms and out onto the shop floor and support retail.
Okay, wonderful. So your official job title, you're the director of distribution, right?
It's true, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, as we've talked to you, you know, in sort of build up to this podcast, this is all about trying to get to know you as a leader and what's important to you. And you've already mentioned that, you know, your team is not behind the man, it's the team that runs the day. So I suppose what I'd love to do is just step back a little bit and talk about, you know, when John was young, and the things that shaped John to be the leader today, if you're willing to share a little bit about that.
Sure, it'd be great.
Great. So tell us a bit more about...
My parents were dairy farmers and I grew up on a farm. So very different livelihood to what I do today.
Yeah.
You learn a lot from that, and I'll try and bring that to life as we talk through the conversation.
Sure.
But and then I started in distribution. I believe distribution found me rather than I found distribution. It's not, I don't think, a career that you sit in school and say, I want to be a director of distribution.
Yeah.
But once you're in it, it's really interesting. So many challenges. And we enable the retailers to sell.
Yeah.
And that's our job. So how I see it, we provide the engine and then the retailers tune that engine to drive the sales.
So tell me a bit more about this farm. So where was this farm?
So predominantly for most of my childhood, we grew up in Wiltshire.
Okay.
My dad had about 120 cows.
Amazing.
So there was also arable as well. So but great memories getting up, you know, all through my school holidays, going to help him milk and do all the chores with on the farm and things like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one of the most exciting times on the farm was then calving and things like that as well. So seeing all of the how it's run and, you know, new livestock coming in and seeing them grow and
oh, wow.
And that type of thing. So, yeah, very nice. Yeah.
So did you didn't fancy a career in farming?
So I did.
Yeah.
If I probably if I won the lottery tonight,
yes,
I'd probably buy a small holding, which would be quite nice, and see my retirement days out then through doing that. But it was a time of milk quotas and farming was tough. So my dad probably talked me out of it, to be fair.
Right.
I didn't really know what I wanted to do beyond that.
Mm.
So I did my pre-BA and I was interested in art and graphics and things like that as well. But yeah, then I got part-time jobs and things like that as well. And I realised I quite liked earning money, which was quite nice when you were young.
Yeah.
So you could have holidays and cars and things like that. So so I just sort of fell into distribution then and started as an agency colleague on a warehouse floor, progressed then through. One of my proudest moments is actually going back to run that distribution centre as a general manager 18 years later from when I started on the agent as an agency colleague.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
But yeah, I've worked in-house and third-party operations as well and really gained valuable experience from every business I've worked in. So whether that is a third party like DHL, Unipart Logistics, Home Retail Group, etc. You know, I've learned many things from many different organisations. So it's been a great journey to get to here.
And when you were young, I don't know much about farming, but I suppose what I would imagine it to be like, particularly if it's your father's farm, it's, you know, it's a family job. It's not something that your dad runs with his, you know, with his team. It's it's everyone's involved.
Mm.
So were there any kind of fundamentals that, you know, that really taught you that maybe that play out, you know, today?
Work ethic. would be one of those. You know, once you commit to something, you have to commit to it. You know, there's no, I'm not going to get up early today, you know, and that is a lifestyle. So very much a lifestyle around, you know, looking after the animals and creating that right environment for those animals to thrive. So, and that really, that's resonated with me throughout my career, I suppose, is the right environment. No matter what business you're in, you need that right environment to unlock the potential of the element that you're dealing with.
Yeah, very interesting. So let's sort of fast forward to today. And so the job that you now do as our director of distribution. So as a leader, how would you describe yourself?
As a leader, well, that wasn't a question you've had.
Yeah, sorry, John. trophy win.
How would I describe myself? I would describe myself as I try to take care of the people and try to create that right environment for people to thrive. I believe leaders encourage people to grow. And I also believe that with the right people and the right processes, performance naturally comes. You could approach it a different way and you could drive performance, you know, the stick and the carrot, I suppose, isn't it? But I always believe if you get the right people and you take care of the people and then you constantly evolve and tune your processes, your performance will naturally increase.
Yeah.
So it's keeping those two things together in terms of, you know, via whether it's uncertainty, you know, a lot going on in the world at the moment, if you cast your mind back to COVID and things like that as well. So, and so how you adapt your leadership style to suit the situation as well, I believe is quite important, as well as trying to drive the change and be that transformational leader, you know, with new things coming on the market, you know, AI is playing a heavier part of things like that. So I try to look after those elements, I suppose, the people and the processes and the natural performance will come with an eye on the external market and new initiatives and things like that as well.
Sure. So it's those two fundamentals, which I'd imagine are absolutely fundamental, like pinnacle to what you do, people and process. And if we go back to the people element, what does that look like in terms of leadership? Like you said, the last 5-ish, 10 years maybe have been incredibly volatile, particularly in your world. Like there's been a huge amount of things that you've had to respond to, whether that COVID or supply chains, whatever it may be. How do you sort of get your people to come on that journey, should we say?
I think it's being really transparent, you know, really bringing to life the what are we doing and why are we doing it, and then really then work together on how are we going to achieve it. So, you know, I'm quite grateful of COVID in a way, because COVID really brought the importance of supply chains to the forefront of businesses, I believe. So, again, if you think about how we then behaved as leaders through COVID, for example, you know, we were really transparent. There was a lot of uncertainty, colleagues worried, you know, store closed, you know, we were still trading online and things like that as well, but many people were very uncertain, and a large number of the demographic removed themselves as available for us to be able to work as well. So it's how you're transparent and work together with the colleagues, with the business, to make sure we're doing the right thing by the people and the business. It's balance, and that's how you'd bring it together.
Yeah, I understand. So obviously, lots of changes happened, but have there been any points in your career that something didn't go to plan or went wrong that, again, shaped you? You know, everything we learn through all of these experiences, is there anything that sticks out in your mind that really shapes your leadership style today?
Yeah, I suppose when I first became a shift manager, I can remember a time when we were behind. So we were behind in terms of loading the vehicles. The product was being picked, but if you can't get the product to the stores to sell, then we're failing. So, and I can remember we had a manager who was very much focused on the stick, and the morale was low, and the direction was unclear, and the process wasn't right. And it really goes back to this people and process. And then the general manager at the time came down onto the shop floor and came and spoke to I was loading vehicles with the team. And we were probably a day and a half behind in terms of loading, which we should have been, which was its critical point really for us in distribution. So, and actually he stopped us loading rather than saying, you've got to load faster. You know, it was more about understanding what the problem was and what we needed to change to be able to be more efficient and therefore drive greater performance and bring us back on track. And that really resonated with me, that that person took the time to come down and understand what was going wrong, and what we needed to do together to fix that. But I suppose one element that really did resonate with me was listening.
Yeah.
So as a leader, we really have to listen to your teams and take that feedback, whether it's our engagement surveys, like our loop survey we do every year, you know, those really matter to how we can gauge what we need to improve to make the environment, it comes back to the environment, around how we make that environment, the people and the process improve, and we're doing the right thing for each of those to drive the performance.
Interesting. So I read something the other day that sometimes it's the light that come out the cracks that is what really shapes leadership. And I suppose what you're describing there is that there was a crack, but actually by stopping, listening, I presume you solved the problem.
Yeah. And what was great about it, that, you know, that person at the time then drove change.
Yes.
And really understood what the problems were. And then they drove the change where, you know, we changed picking processes, which impact the outbound processes and things like that as well. So, and that one person took that time to listen, to understand, and then drive the change that we wanted to see.
Yeah.
And it was a win-win. It was great.
And that's something that sounds like it stuck with you, that approach.
Yeah, it was really take that moment to step back and understand, you know, especially when you're under pressure. It's about being calm, consistent, and understanding the problem, what we need to do to fix that problem. Because you have to be agile. You know, one thing we can't predict is retail.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so many factors that impact retail, from exchange rates through weather, through, you know, geopolitical issues across the world at the moment. There's so many things that can impact our business. So it's how we can be agile and change, you know, almost in the moment, or have a plan to change in line with the changes that we're seeing and impacting trade. So it is about being agile and listening and understanding.
Yeah, interesting. So on that sort of similar vein, is there a moment throughout your career where, as a leader, you've had to take a very tough decision? And if so, what did that teach you, that experience?
So I think the toughest decisions you have to make or implement are anything that involves people and that impact on people. So if you look at restructures, for example, you know, if you want to change a structure and, you know, increase spans of control or something like that, you know, it impacts people. And those people, you know, haven't done anything wrong, or it's the right thing for the area, it's the right thing for the business. So it's how you treat the people through that process and make sure you're fair, you're transparent, and you do it with respect. So, and I suppose they are the hardest decisions you have to make, because, you know, you're not doing it because you want to do it and change the people. You're doing it because you have to do the right thing for the business and the customer and the people.
Okay. So we're focusing on the negatives here, John, but it's just, I think sometimes those are the things that really shape you. So when you're under pressure or things feel out of control, what version of yourself shows up in those experiences as a leader, of course?
I think it comes back to calm. I've always say to my team, it's all in the planning.
Okay. So I've heard you say that, actually.
I truly believe it is all in the planning. And I learned that from mistakes that we've made in the past, you know, where you don't have robust plans, you haven't modeled scenarios. Because like I said, our world changes and we have to be very agile.
Yeah.
But we have to have a plan, and you have to think, you know, plus 10%, minus 10%, what does that look like in terms of volume and flow? And that has a big impact on the headcount to be able to achieve the SLAs that we promised to the business. So, so you have to, that version, I suppose, that comes out is, I like to think, one with a plan, somebody you can trust, but at the same time, a human around that. So, you know, we have to flex our communication. You know, when things are uncertain or when there's change coming, and through those volatile times, you have to make sure we are communicating in the right way, both to your management teams and to the colleague teams. And for me, that's when things like our networks and our forums come to life. So our colleague forums that we introduce, you know, has a huge impact on how we make changes as a leadership team. So we really try to listen to those colleagues and that feedback, and they've been really, really, really powerful for us.
And just tell me a little bit more about that colleague forum. What does that, how does that operate as such?
So we implemented in Thatcham in a distribution centre first, and then we've now got a colleague form in Knightsbridge from my areas as well. Yeah. And we've rolled it out across the business. They really give the colleagues an opportunity to sit with ourselves. So it's normally myself, it would be Luke, it would be potentially Andrew, Amy, etc. in Knightsbridge, always accompanied by our HRBP, Liz Hall. And it does really provide valuable insight for us about the, it's not always big things, it's sometimes the little things that really make a difference to those colleagues' lives within that environment. You know, I truly believe in terms of those colleagues' forms to have and drive change. You know, we've proven that on many times now from the actions that we've taken off the back of the feedback from our colleagues. So I do believe they are a very powerful forum for us to listen.
Yeah, and you're right, isn't it? Sometimes, you know, as leaders, we can be sucked into that kind of everything needs to be strategic and big and blue sky. And actually sometimes just connecting with our teams, it's all about those small things that really make a difference to their lives. I mean, I'm sure there's lots of examples that you can draw on in that sense.
There's things like, you know, from a simple thing around the number of seats, for example, within the canteen at certain times, through to the standard of tea, coffee, the canteen facilities, and right through to how we keep colleagues informed around when we are delivering a big strategic change, such as additional automation within the distribution centre, you know, new equipment and things like that. A lot of effort goes into the project plan, but also a lot of effort goes into then how do we communicate the what and the why to the colleagues as well, but also the impact it's going to have whilst we're making those changes is really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll use those, again, those colleague forums as a platform to cascade that information, because some colleagues will find it easier to talk to another colleague than they will to be come and ask questions of the management and leadership teams. So it really gives an avenue, multiple avenues for a colleague to be able to ask questions.
Understood. I mean, you've got to have good coffee, right, in a warehouse.
Oh, without
is that not fundamental as well? Process, people, coffee.
I must add a coffee to that, that thing,
Perfect. Okay. So moving a little bit on from I suppose, the negative side and you know, the things that have maybe shaped you from adversity to kind of a more positive side. So you talked a little bit about your father and running, you know, a dairy farm, and you sort of shared that work ethic was something that was sort of a fundamental value. But are there any other values that you hold dear that, you know, you've learned through your career, through your journey, through your personal experiences that again, shape you to who you are today and the leader that you present yourself as?
I like to think, I've probably mentioned it around being human and trust. You know, they're the two out of our Harris values. They're two that really resonate with me.
Yeah.
You know, we want colleagues to really trust us as leaders. But there's also, I suppose, the other values that I've learned through my career around that human, are things like around that investment and providing opportunities and bringing that environment again to life. If I would call it out, it would be both being human and trust were the two values that resonate with me through the career. And there's loads of things that underpin that in terms of the human and the trust. You know, it's about being transparent, communicating regularly, and being open and honest and consistent for me is fundamentals of our business.
And are there any experiences that, you know, out of all the values that you could choose, is there anything that's happened through your career that, or personally, that you think that's why that those two are the ones that really are pertinent to me?
Yeah, I suppose for me, it's trust is a really, really key for me, because if our colleagues don't trust you as a leader, you're never going to succeed. It comes back to that carrot and stick and that difference between leadership and management.
Yeah.
If you're a great leader, you create a pool, you unlock that environment for people to thrive. And I suppose that's where I see the values of true leadership coming through. You create the pull, you know, rather than that push. There's times you need to dip into management. Sure. There's times you need to be a strong leader.
Yeah.
But for me, it's how you create that pull with your team.
Yeah, interesting. Great. And I'm sure you have lots of kind of aspiring managers to leaders in your own team. And I know that development is something that again, is core to you. What do you tell kind of those people in your teams that are wanting to grow and develop their careers? Like, what advice would you give them in those early kind of management leader kind of, you know, points in their career?
Yeah, so I love a career conversation. I suppose it's because I'm getting old and have lots of experience now.
To draw
I make mistakes along the way as well. So my advice to colleagues would be to have a career plan.
Okay.
My career really started growing when I had a plan. Mm. And somebody gave me that opportunity and sat with me and really helped shape my plan.
Okay.
The other thing that really drove my career that what I would share as a positive experience is sharing your plan as well. Be open and transparent, because that builds that trust.
Right.
Because you don't want to step on people to drive your own career.
Oh, nice.
It's of creating that pull of how you take the people on a, especially when you become a leader, a manager, a leader in that yeah. journey, is how you create that pull. And to create that pull, you have to share your plan and let people know why you were doing some of the things that you were doing as well.
Mm.
And that's a piece of advice I'd give to colleagues, is have self-belief, be a bit selfish. It's your career.
Yeah.
And then have a plan about what you want to do. The other piece of advice I would share that I've learned from massively on my career is to gain experience. It isn't about constant promotion for me. Mm. It is about gaining experience to be the best version of yourself.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes a sideways move is a right thing for your career. And I don't think people sometimes appreciate, actually go and get that experience, because it will make you a better leader in the future, a better manager, a better stock controller, whatever the role may be.
Mm.
Gain that experience and embrace it, because that creates opportunities for you later on in your career.
I love that, John. And actually, you know, something that I think that we hear about is, the you know, in promotion, you get, there's all the positives, like, you know, promotion that it entails. Sometimes you have to like make those mistakes and fail to really learn and grow. And that can only happen when you've got that kind of depth and breadth of experience. And so we often call it the squiggly career, because actually, yeah, it's not always about stepping up. It's stepping sideways. Mm. I couldn't agree more. I'm intrigued to know a little bit more about this plan, though. So your career plan, what did that look like? What were you aspiring to be?
Yeah, I suppose the driver for me, once I made a shift manager, I never saw myself become an operations manager, then a general manager. I thought I never wanted to go past a shift manager.
Mm.
Had a great work-life balance. My wife was working, I was working. And if you've ever actually listened to my career story, it goes into a bit more detail, but my wife and I, we lost a child at 20 weeks in terms of our pregnancy.
Mm.
And that really changed me as being more orchestrated about my plan. So my wife didn't have to work for a period of time, so I could then provide for the family. So I suppose at that time, that was my core driver to driving my career. And I think once you've understand what your driver is about what you want to do, whether that is, you know, I've got ambition, I want to be, you know, the next CEO or whatever that may be, or I want to be a shift manager, I want to be an ops manager, I want to be a general manager. Mm. You need that thing that drives you to drive that next step, and you need to want it yourself.
Purpose.
And for me, that really drove me then to create a plan, because I was really uncertain about how to go about that next level.
Mm.
And I sat down with one of my mentors in the past, and I said, I want the next step. They were really supportive and they gave me some great advice.
Mm.
And I ended up leaving the business I worked in for a period of time to go and get that next opportunity, because the business I was working at that time couldn't satisfy my demand of time. It would have taken too long for me to achieve that next level.
Right.
So that's why I talk about gain experience. I'm almost moved for a sideways step to go and work for a third party. And that gave me really valuable experience. And then my career really accelerated from there. So I looked about what I needed, and I looked at, you know, what qualifications do I need? What skills and experience do I really need to leverage to be able to get the next level? And to do that, I had to move around and do some different operations. You know, I talked about, I worked on nights and run a night shift, very different beast to being on a day shift.
Yeah.
I worked for a third party, very different again to being in an in-house. So you really learn around the commerciality of a business when you work for a third party, because, you know, you want to do the right thing by the customer, but you also want to do the right thing by your own business.
Yeah.
So, and to get the best, you drive both. So, and to be that great, you know, again, leader or a great partner with a third party, that's really drives pace.
Yeah.
And really taught me then through about, you know, what do I want to achieve? Put pen to paper.
Mm.
Doesn't have to be in a, you know, a very, you know, formatted way or anything else like that, but put it down, put pen to paper. I pinned mine on my office wall. So if people would go, what's that on your wall?
Yeah.
And then I would talk about it. So, that's and it brilliant. Drove conversation, but it was very open, very transparent. Mm. But I had a plan. I gave myself a timeline of what I wanted to achieve. And it's paid off.
Oh, I love that, John. I think that's something we should like all do, have a career plan and put it on the wall. And actually it does spark conversation and it's really transparent. Everyone knows where, you know, what your ambition is. But I would imagine you've probably inspired a number of people that work for you with that as well.
What it did was open a door for people to come and talk to me around, I don't really know. I know I want more.
Mm.
I don't really know what I want
or
what that will look like. And that's where we then sit down and say, you know, something I learned in Harrods was around the motivational cards.
Yeah.
So really understand yourself and what motivates you. And I do that quite often with even my senior team and things like that as well, so we can understand it. We've done type coach and things like that with all of my team now.
Yeah.
So we understand ourselves and how we fit together as a team.
Yeah.
Have a plan. You don't have to have the next 10 years mapped out. Have the next two years mapped out. Have the next 3 years mapped out.
Mm.
And you've got something to aim for.
Mm.
And if you've got that aim and you've got that drive, it will come to life.
Yeah.
I really believe that. So.
Yeah, really fantastic. You've inspired me. What I also quite like from what you just described is that having that breadth of experience, you've been in the shoes of pretty much everyone that reports into you now, I would imagine. So you have empathy for all of those scenarios and situations. And I do think as a leader, you described that, you know, being human is really important. I think that probably really helps you really connect and empathize and appreciate all of the different nuances that, you know, working in a distribution center may have.
It's really important to me as well to be visible because, you know, you can have all of these, I want people to trust me. Unless you live it, unless you demonstrate it and role model the behaviors, you will never get that trust. People won't confide in you. It's about how you role model it and you're visible to the team, especially when, you know, times are tough, and it's about you being out there and being visible and, you know, understanding where we are and, you know, what do we need to do to support each other?
Yeah.
And for me, that is about making sure you're visible on the shop floor, you're visible in the warehouses, and collaboration would be the other thing I would say. You know, you want every department to be collaborative. And for me, that was probably one of my learnings around that. If you cast your mind back to what I said at the start, when we started the conversation, was around we were behind on loading and things like that. That leader did one thing really, which was then really pull all of the teams together to say, well, you need to change to improve this element.
Mm.
And people understood the why are we doing this then?
Yeah.
And they then have skin in the game. They then have buy-in because they felt listened to. But yeah, it really does pay back.
And just not told.
Yeah. You don't have to raise your voice. You don't have to shout.
No.
It's about being transparent. It's about communicating effectively and knowing what we're trying to achieve.
And common purpose.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, John. That was amazing. So obviously one of the reasons we're here today is because we are launching a new employer brand campaign, Everyday Excellence. And you're the person that we are talking to today about Brilliant Basics, which is one of the themes of our Everyday Excellence campaign, one of the chapters. So you've talked a lot about this in one shape or form over the last 30 minutes. But I think when you look at when you lead, particularly in your world, Brilliant Basics is key, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to me about what that means for you? You've talked about process, but in the sort of day to day, how does Brilliant Basics play out for you?
If you walk around a distribution center or a distribution or a stock room or something like that, for me, it plays out in terms of the product is flowing. So we're distributing things and therefore products should flow. When we walk around a distribution center and those basic checks are in place, if we're causing congestion, then something's not flowing. Something is not working somewhere along that the process again that we talked about. So you could tell a lot by when you walk around a distribution center, how colleagues will look at you, make eye contact, smile, say good morning, good afternoon. So you could tell a lot from how people are feeling just by walking around and engaging with people. The second thing you can engage is the product moving around the journey from inbound to storage to being picked out and out to store. Right. And then when it gets to Knightsbridge, is it flowing through the back of house areas and not dwelling in any area? Because if it dwells, it's not making its way to its end destination or we're falling behind an SLA. So it's very easy, I find, to engage. The standards also a good measure. So if you're behind, first thing that would normally drop are standards within the warehouse because everyone's then all hands to the pump and the standards will then drop. So,
and when you say standards, do you mean like cleanliness?
Yeah. Obviously that has an impact on safety.
Yeah.
So preventing trip hazards. Are people, you know, when you walk around, you're checking to make sure people are manual handling correctly and things like that as well. Now in our world, in distribution, you're constantly lifting and shifting product.
Yeah.
And over 50% of any personal injury is manual handling. So
right.
Again, it's a bit like when you drive, you know, when you pass your driving test, you drive with that 10 to 2 scenario. It's the same as when you're doing manual handling. Right. If you're cutting corners, you will hurt yourself. And again, that's a gauge that we would be looking at when you walk around. But eye contact, standards, product moving, all good measures of being brilliant at the basics.
And is there a time that those brilliant basics have not gone to plan?
Probably be many.
But, yeah. but, one that stands out, maybe.
So the one that stands out for me actually was one of my learnings again when I cast my mind back in my early career.
Okay.
And I was on nights and I hadn't been on nights very long. And we all love to break a record in distribution.
Okay.
We like to be.
Is that a thing?
We are quite competitive.
Fair enough.
So, and there was the most picked on a shift in terms of units picked. And we wanted to break that record. So we went after that one night and I tasked the team to we're going to break the record tonight and chivvy people along. But actually what we did was we ruined it for the day shift in terms of we congested the outbound banks like that. Because again, it's about balance and flow. So, you know, one of the learnings around that thing is understanding the entire end-to-end process. So, and whilst it was great, we were celebrating beating a pick record, actually what we did was make it harder for our next shift coming in.
Yeah.
So I suppose, again, the thing that resonated with me, it's not about breaking records. It's about being that brilliant at the basics and consistency and hitting the plans. Mm. And if you hit the plan across 10 out of 10 areas, it's better than hitting 5 out of 10. So, because again, the product flows, the product moves, and it makes it to the end destination, which is then ready for sale.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're a retail business, and we need to get the product to the shelf.
So, you talked about this a little bit actually around collaboration, and I've been to Thatcham, and I mean, anyone that goes always finds it absolutely fascinating for people who don't work in that environment. But it's clear to see there's lots of different areas that, and like you said, it's that flow. So from one part to the next to the next. So collaboration is critical, I'd imagine. So how do you make sure that, you know, the people that work for you and your teams do collaborate and that they can uphold those brilliant basics at all time, but doing it really consistently at the same time too?
I think it's really transparency again in terms about what are we doing and why are we doing it. I can give you an example of when we launch our sales setup. So, it doesn't happen overnight. Well, sales setup happens overnight, but a prep for sales setup happens across 2 weeks prior in terms of picking stock out, sale ticketing it, and making sure that we have the shelf ready for stock ops to hang to size cube and everything else, particularly in fashion brands.
Yeah.
And historically, when I was just managing the DC, we were very focused about what the DC,
distribution centre. Yep.
So in Thatcham, we were very focused about what the distribution centre needed to achieve, rather than thinking about what did we need to achieve then in Knightsbridge Fashion Warehouse, what did we need to achieve for stock ops? For us all to be effective, to make sure the stock is available, priced correctly, hung nicely, size displayed for the customer, so it's easy to buy. And, you know, breaking down those silos, it's not a nice job in terms of sale ticketing because you're sticking tickets on every individual label and things like that. So, but to pull that together and we then split up, you know, and spread the work across the three areas. And between Luke, Andrew and Amy, they really brought that to life. And they really then understand why are we doing things. And sometimes you have to be my leaders that I work for currently said something that really resonated with me, which we have to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And actually, sometimes that means you're taking the pain for another area of the business because it's the right thing to do for the business and the customer. So, and that really resonated with me since across the 8 years now I've been within Harrods. It's been, I suppose, something that stood out across my career. And that really drives that collaboration about the pace at which we drive product to the shelf.
So John, that actually brings us to a close. So thank you so much for all of that insight. It's been absolutely fascinating. I think career plan will definitely stick in my mind for a very long time. But before we do finish, we did set you a little task and we asked you to bring something that sort of described something that was a hobby or a personal interest or something that really sort of, again, shaped you and made you who the leader you are today. So I hope you've been able to bring something.
So I wasn't allowed to bring a cow.
Oh, really? Yeah. Especially not to this part of Harrods as well.
So I wow, bought a picture of a cow and my dad.
Amazing.
So because that really resonates with me, like I brought to life around creating that right environment.
Yeah.
And I think without that learning at very young age, I suppose, around that environment piece and how you make sure you take care of your area and commit to what you drive and change, then for me, this really resonated with me around that element of my childhood. So, and that stuck with me throughout my entire career. But yeah, and it casts my mind back to my dad.
Oh, it's so lovely. Do you have that on your wall somewhere at home?
So my mum has that by her bed.
Does she?
So, which is quite nice, just as a memory. And yeah, it's a good memory to have.
Thank you so much for sharing that, John. Now, before we let you go, we do have a little gift for you too.
Oh, and wow.
For anyone who watched some previous content that we have created with you that pretty much went viral, I would like to say, this will hopefully make you smile. So this is your very own
fantastic
clapperboard. So you can have it in the back. Do you want to explain why this is rather funny?
So you've probably seen it on LinkedIn already, yeah, in terms of bloopers. I thought every great film crew should have one of these. I said, I thought we'd have one of these. I created a bit of a giggle. But yeah, it's. I don't like doing these things, actually.
Well, you wouldn't know.
I don't like, I suppose what I don't like is being in front of the camera. Mm. You know, as you said, my role's behind the scenes. It's I've got a face for radio, not for TV. yeah, it's about the power of the team and how we bring that to life. So that's why I suppose I do these things, is because it's how we have an opportunity to show the team and bring that to life. And for me, you've got to be able, being comfortable, being uncomfortable, and put yourself in front of the camera, put yourself in front of people and share your experiences and journeys. And this for me is a great gift. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
I'm going to use that now on all of my my little video clips for the teams.
But there were no bloopers today, so we didn't even need to use it.
I'm sure there are.
No. Thank you, John. That was amazing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you today. It's
much
been lovely to speak to you and lots of really, really practical advice as well as inspirational advice. So thank you for your time today. We really appreciate
Thanks for having me.